right, we're in the second hour of the show about nothing. Puck with you until 1 o'clock. Curtis Crabtree in the Red Box producer's booth. It is the smarter way to watch and play. What do we got? We are in the Ballpark Realty studio, ballparkrealty.com. I should say ballpark-realty.com. You have any real estate questions up north, give Jerry a call, 206-510-2749. Headlines brought to you by VenueKings.com. And we have some breaking news in the world of hockey. That's our trade horn. That's just our that's our Kraken horn. Kevin Weeks, ESPN NHL reporter. He is reporting the Kraken have traded Curtis McDermott to the Avs for a fourth-round draft pick in 2023. So there you go. Big news there. Ian will be all over it. Coming up at 1 o'clock today, give you the very latest. Why did they do that? And why did they not get Ovechkin, who signed a five-year, $47.5 million deal with the Capitals today? Son of a gun. All I wanted was him.
We're not going to be f***ing sunk this year.
That's it.
We're the Stanley Cup champions! Yeah!
We missed out. And America missed out. Seattle missed out. We all missed out not having him on the team. Let's see. Nick Rolovich today would not inform why he's unvaccinated. Really was, I'd say defiant, not too strong of a word. Just was non-committal about anything. Really wouldn't talk about it. Aaron Rodgers has shown up on the first day of the Green Bay Packers training camp. Does people want to... We can do is it even a spoiler? It's not. You know what? Here's the deal. If you don't want to know anything about the Olympics, then don't listen. Although I had to keep this away from my daughter this morning. Simone Biles, Team USA, got silver in the team competition, and she pulled out. Not because of injury. Mental. Too much pressure, according to her. That she. This was right after her vault, in which... it was not a good vault. Not a good vault for her, and it's not a good vault at all. I watch too much gymnastics to know what a good and bad vault is. It's unfortunate, really. And so she pulled out of the team event. They ended up getting silver, falling behind Russia. We don't know as of yet if she is going to do the individual. I don't know. I haven't seen anything. She has formally said she will or will not do it, which happens Thursday, I believe. Oklahoma and Texas have formally asked the SEC for a member invite, which is just too bad, man. Just sucks. This whole thing sucks. Not going to lie. It really, really stinks. All of it. I just grew up with college football being so special to me. I love college football more than anything, any of the sports. And some of the things I like, the changes, some of the things I just can't stand. You know, Oklahoma and Texas playing the SEC, I can't stand it. You know, Texas A&M and the SEC. No disrespect to Colorado and Utah, but they don't belong in the Pac-10. It's just all of it. I would like it to go back to how I grew up and what it was like. You know, that's what I would like to see out of college football. And I'm not saying that you don't have, like, the name, image, and likeness. That stuff, fine. But the way that college football is now... The reason I love it more than anything, it's probably the reason why a lot of people love it too, is how regional the thing is. And we have just thrown away the regional aspect of the sport. And we did it years ago when Nebraska joined the Big Ten. They don't belong in the Big Ten. They belong in the Big Eight. How it used to be. It was Oklahoma and Nebraska and Oklahoma State and Colorado and Iowa State and Kansas State and Missouri. You know, and the Pac-10 was the Pac-10, and the Big Ten was Iowa and Michigan, Ohio State and Illinois, and the Spartans and Minnesota and Purdue and Wisconsin and Indiana, Northwestern. The SEC was the teams that were in, I don't know, the South. Tennessee and Florida and Alabama and LSU and Arkansas and Auburn. Or not Arkansas, actually, wasn't it. Auburn and Georgia and Ole Miss and Vandy, Kentucky, Mississippi State. You know, and go back to the old... You know, the Southwestern Conference, which was just the hoot back in the day, man. A&M and Arkansas and Baylor and Texas and SMU and Houston, Rice, TCU and Tech. But those days are long gone. But I don't know. As the 10-year-old, 12-year-old fan of me misses that a lot. And we are ruining college football. a lot. Now, that's not to say that I think a great step in the right direction is the playoffs. Great step in the right direction is the name, image, and likeness. But these conferences and who's playing where, it's just we've lost it. We've lost all of it, and it just really stinks. Back to the Mariners. All right, I'm going to ask you, can you do it without hearing Jimmy Lake? We're going to hear Jimmy Lake coming up in about 8 minutes.
Do what? Do this?
I need Riz.
Rayleigh looks in. The sign from Maldonado.
Do you have any like natural music?
Left side for the Astros. Now the left-handers. 1-1 pitch to Dillon.
Come on!
Swinging him up. Deep to left field. Grandma, get out the rye bread and mustard. Grand salami time. Upper deck left field down the line. Dillon Moore with a grand salami.
Oh, that stank!
In one of the greatest comebacks I've seen in a long, long time.
Yeah, you're damn right, Riz. You're damn right. The Mariners rally from being down a 6-0 last night. And now everybody is abuzz. Everybody, and you can't base everything on what you've seen like on social media. But I would assume that everybody in town last night who fancies themselves as a sports fan was locked in last night. Locked into that game once, you know, Cal Raleigh had the bases clearing double there in the fourth inning. The Kyle Seager 3-run home run in the fifth inning. And then, of course, the great at-bats there in the eighth inning by Kelnick and Murphy. And, of course, the grand slam by Dillon Moore. That was a no-doubter. The second that thing hit his bat, he celebrated, pointed at the dugout, and ran around the bases. And it just was awesome. I said it before. We talked about the unexpected seasons. Like, in a weird way, I don't know how other people feel. It's the unexpected seasons to me that are more fun than the seasons in which there are the heightened expectations for me. Because it comes out of nowhere, and there are no thoughts about this team being any good. The 2004-2005 Sonics team, we referenced them before. Nate McMillan had coached that team. They were picked. I think I said the Pacific. I guess they had changed it by then. It was the Northwest. But there was no expectations of this team. They weren't to do anything. They weren't expected to be any good, even though they had Ray Allen. And they ended up just being unbelievable. And we talked about it earlier where they had lost that first game to the LA Clippers. They got blown out 114-84. And then they rattled off, nine wins in a row or something like that. And they end up taking out the Sacramento Kings in a five-game series. End up winning the series 4-1. And then they end up losing there to the Spurs in game six. But I don't know, man. That was such a fun team. It was such a fun team to root for. A great superstar there in Ray Allen, who was on the team, Rashard Lewis. Everybody will remember that team because of Danny Fortson just setting just unbelievable screens. It was where Nick Rolovich. Nick Collison was on the team, and he was a contributor, even though despite being a banged up. Luke Ridenour, I mean, had good young players. Ronald Flip Murray. I mean, God, there were some great names on this team. These were all guys that they weren't great. They just, at the right time, mixed with the right players. You got great time off the bench from Antonio Daniels, if people remember. Reggie Evans. Jerome James. That was the damn year that Jerome James got himself paid. Vladimir Radmanovich coming off the bench and dropping threes. Vitaly Potapinko, who was a contributor. I mean, there were no names. Absolute no names. And they made it to the postseason. And I just think there's a lot of correlations to this baseball team. They don't have the superstar like they had with Ray Allen. But they just got a lot of nobodies who have now put themselves in a position. And the most dangerous thing in sports is belief. And they, both pro and con. If you don't believe, it ruins you. If you believe, it's dangerous in a good way. And they believe right now. They believe they're a good team. They don't care. I hope the run differential stupid crowd last night was upset that they won, by only three. Because now they're because it was a topic earlier today. It was a topic on MLB Central. Yeah, but the run differential is this. Who bleeping cares what their run differential is? It does not matter. The end of the day, the only thing that matters, did you score more runs than the other team? God, we overcomplicated all it. So if they scored more runs and they won, okay, fine. Had they lost yesterday 10-0, who cares? They lost. Move on. Win the series. You win the next two games, no one's going to care about the first one. So it's so damn fun to watch them play, and it's just a welcome surprise because, as we've talked about many times before, never thought they would be in this position where they're at right now, especially how they played in the first part of the season. There's been rumors swirling around. Whit Merrifield, of course, is being tied to the Mariners. They were, as I mentioned this before, on MLB Central. They were talking about this morning the word out of Kansas City, again, their words, saying that the Royals need to be blown away by an offer. It has to make their club better as of next year. We talked about there was a small rumor floating around about the availability of shortstop Trey Turner. That is heated up more now earlier today on MLB Central, but later with John Morosi throwing again more heat on it, that the Mariners may be interested in Trey Turner. That's a damn no-brainer if they can go get Trey Turner. You got him for more years. He's still young. Okay, who doesn't matter if he plays shortstop. Play him at second base. Decide maybe in the offseason if you want to move him back to shortstop and move JP over to second base. I think JP, where he's at and his status in the locker room, in the clubhouse, I would just keep him there because he's earned that right. And he's a gold glove shortstop. So, but you add someone like Trey Turner, that only helps you this year. That's going to help you from years to come. And you should be. Don't get scared away. Well, he's going to make a lot of money. Well, but they're going to spend, right? They're going to spend. So they're going to spend. Let's spend. Let's go. So I hope they're active in it. It would be great, and it'd be something. It would be cool to see. What did you want to do? You want to do Lake next segment?
Yeah. Do you want to?
Well, sure.
I have
how
about
long is
seven?
Okay, yeah, we can push him to the next segment. I mean, we got nothing planned. Jimmy Lake, who some of the highlights, I don't know if it's going to be in the portion that we're going to hear, talked about. I think 100% of his coaches are vaccinated. I think he said 95% of the team is vaccinated there as well. And again, we played it earlier today, but Nick Rolovich, not his team. He did not give any explanation why he's not vaccinated. And according to Jahad Woods, their star linebacker, he has not told the team why he is not vaccinated. Other news and notes from today, real quickly. Jamal Adams is going to show up to camp despite no deal. That's Ian Rappaport yesterday. He's on with Furness on Fridays. He'll probably add more detail to that there on Friday. Whoever else they've been linked to, I don't know what starting pitching is out there for them. You know, Marquez at Colorado has been a name that has been linked to them for quite a while. It would be interesting to how much, Curtis, their game plan has changed here in the last month. Because I wonder if we get to the truth serum with DePoto a month ago, what were you planning to do? What did you want to do? And how much in 30 days that has changed?
Well, I think you can just point back to when they brought Kelnick up the first time. Honestly, because they put Kelnick in the leadoff spot. The team was struggling. They got their doors blown off in San Diego. Hey, let's put Kelnick top of the lineup so he gets some at-bats to help him with his development. And then they started winning games. And now they've kept winning games, and they are in a way different spot now than they were at that time. I think it's forced them to change their thought process, because I don't think they had any intention of being buyers at the trade deadline, a month and a half ago.
I agree with you.
It's tough to make the argument that they should have at that point in time. But the way the team has played up until now, the run that they're on, they're what, 34-20 over the last 55 games?
It's just amazing where they're at.
It's pretty crazy. Now, it is still a very flawed baseball team. They basically have two starting pitchers. They've got half a dozen guys hitting sub-240. Like, it's still a team that has its massive holes. So, they can still add to this roster, but I don't think it's a trade deadline where you throw all your chips in the middle. I don't think you push the entire all you have into the middle of the pot and go for it. In that regard, because I think there's too many holes in the boat to try to plug with a trade deadline fix for them to get to where you'd want to go.
Right.
You worry about the trades like Shin-Soo Choo for Eduardo Perez and Asdrubal Cabrera for Ben Broussard and the Eric Bedard trade and the Heathcliff Slocum for Jason Veritek and Derek Lowe trades from where they thought they were this close and quote-unquote went for it and it blew up in their face. So I think there's a way for them to add and help this team because it deserves it without, you know, shoving everything in, because I don't think they're at that point to do that move.
Yeah, and I think, don't you think most Mariner fans don't feel that way, though? That they don't want them to shove it all in for one guy?
I would hope so.
And I don't think anybody, you know, quote, in the media or any of us have said, let's shove it all in, you know, for one guy or a couple of guys. But something that they could possibly do, I mean, just anything that they can do, I just would never, if there an opportunity presents itself to where they can acquire someone financially, maybe if they can take more onus of the financials of it.
Sure.
Or even look ahead to a rental type player, or you look ahead to, you'd have to pay that guy in free agency. I would just hope that would not scare them off. Because we have detailed many times on this show and people have elsewhere. Financially, they are fine. They have always been fine. They made a decision not to spend this offseason because they just did not want to spend. But they've got the resources to spend, and they know that. They just sometimes have got to be willing to stop thinking about the bottom line every year and what it would mean to actually field a team that is competitive, because that's what they didn't do this year. Now, it has backfired on them in a way. Well, not in a way. It has backfired on them because these guys, they have lucked into putting together an actually good team. But they put this team together this season on the cheap. And everyone knows that. And that is, you can't argue against that. This was built on the cheap. It is just like the movie Major League. This is exactly the same thing.
Well, that would be the flip side of this, is that they're sitting there saying, we're not paying squat for this, and yet we're winning. Like, you know, we're getting more people in the stands than we were anticipating because we're better than we thought with a roster on the cheap. Why would we spend more money now?
But Cleveland needed another bat in the movie.
We're bringing in money. Like, why would we spend? Why would we do anything?
Jake needed. He couldn't be the full-time catcher. His legs weren't good enough anymore, Curtis.
His knees were shot.
His knees were done. They needed another help. They needed more help.
Be fair, when that first pitch to Dylan Moore last night was on the inner half of the plate, I thought to myself, lean into it, Dorn!
No, yeah, you're right.
He came back and made up for that.
Oh, that was just a pop, man. God, that was a pop. Such a great hit. Great hit.
What was a great hit?
Here we go. Oh. Raley looks in. The sign from Maldonado. Infield back left side for the Astros. Now the left-handers, 1-1 pitch to Dylan. Swing and a well-hit ball, deep to left field. Grandma, get out the rye bread and mustard. Grand salami time.
That's a professional call with his voice not cracking and yelling over it.
With a grand salami, and the Mariners lead the Astros 11-8. In one of the greatest comebacks I've seen in a long, long time.
All right, Jimmy Lake, he addressed the media earlier today. We're going to pay a portion of that coming up to podcast, all in one app.
Now, back to the Puck Show, powered by Redbox on Sports Radio 950 KJR and the iHeartRadio app.
It's a Common Sense Tuesday. Puck with you. Curtis Crabtree here as well. He's in the Redbox Producers booth. I'm in the Ballpark Realty Studio, ballpark-realty.com. For all your real estate news up north, give Jerry a call, 206-510-2749. Tweet of the day coming up next. Also, top story of the day on your lunch break brought to you by Farm Fresh Northwest. And then 12:30, what did you miss? Jimmy Lake. It is Pac-12 Media Day. The Huskies were chosen number 2 to finish second in the North. Pac-12 preseason media poll. Oregon was picked to win the North, also picked to win the conference. The Jimmy Lake addressed the media about 35 minutes ago. Just talking about the team, probably talking about Nick Rolovich's decision to not be vaccinated. Probably what's the vaccination rate with him, his coaching staff, and his team, the head dog, Jimmy Lake.
All right. Well, good morning. Good afternoon, everybody. You know, we're excited to be here. We're excited that we have some normalcy. It's good to see everybody's faces, the player representatives from all the other Pac-12 schools, the head football coaches, the ADs, be able to shake hands and have some sense of normalcy going into the 2021 season.
That's a good shot.
You know, we're really excited. We felt like we had a really good team in 2020. We obviously all went through a you know, a very adverse situation with the pandemic. But then having our season cut short, we've kept the virus out of our building for so long. But as everybody can see, the coronavirus does not discriminate. Ended our season short, and so there's really a sense of unfinished business with our football team. We've had a really good off season. Our guys have trained and had a huge chip on their shoulder for the way our season unfolded and ended in 2020. We had a few players that had a chance to go on to the National Football League, but decided to come back and wear that gold Washington helmet one more time to end it the right way. We have a bunch of returning starters on both sides of the ball, and we have some tremendous depth. But we still got to put in the work. We put a bunch of work in from January up until July, and now we're excited to have a very competitive August training camp and let the cream rise to the top at every single position group. So we're excited, and we're ready to get to work.
Coach Cameron Buford, Los Angeles. I'd like to ask you, what is your communication to your teammate or to your players on the NIL ruling? And how do you approach that, and how do you expect that to impact your team in the locker room?
Yeah, so it's obviously a huge deal for amateurs. This has been a long time coming. I think there's it's a huge landscape that's unknown for a lot of entities. But really, the message to our team is we need to focus on becoming better football players, and we need to go out there and win some football games. And if we do that, all that stuff is going to take care of itself. You know, if we go out there and don't play very well and don't have a very good team, there's not going to be a lot of people that are going to want to pay our players for the name, image, and likeness. And so, you know, my message, to my team is, you know, I know Michael Jordan, he wasn't worried about who was sponsoring him when he was out there winning championships. He was worried about winning championships and let all that stuff, take care of itself in the end. And so which I'm very proud of our team. They've stayed focused. They haven't spent their entire time, trying to promote their name, image, and likeness. Which I'm all for our players, cashing in, so to speak, on money that they're able to receive from places. But if we focus on our team first, and that's our culture, we focus on the team first. If we focus on the team first, all that stuff will take care of itself.
Head coach Owen Kaminsky with Wright for Cal. I know this was your first year as a head coach. Congratulations on finishing it. What did you think about it your first year? Did it live up to your expectations? Has it been the dream that you always thought? And then what didn't you expect and kind of have to learn on the fly?
I didn't expect a worldwide pandemic, that's for sure. I don't think any of us expected that. But, it's just funny. Things prepare you for certain moments. And, my over 20 years coaching, in a weird way prepared me for this moment of going through these challenges that we went through in 2020. You know, I've been a part of staffs who have been fired. I've had to move across the country. I've had to pack my family up in a U-Haul and move ourselves to different locations. And so, all those ups and downs that I've gone through throughout my career prepared me and our team for the challenges that we had in 2020. I pride myself on being prepared, always being prepared, and then the coronavirus really turned the whole world, upside down. And so it was hard to be prepared for the coronavirus and the different curveballs it threw at you from every single day, from planning and schedules, you name it. But it made our team grow closer, going through something so adverse as that. And now we're excited. that we can have a normal 2021 season, which I know college football fans are extremely excited about as well.
What did you like most about being a head coach in your first year?
Mike Farrell, Seattle Times. Jimmy, it's been a struggle at times for Pac-12 schools to keep the best players out west in terms of recruiting in recent years. Just what is UW's strategy? What's your strategy and your message in trying to keep the best players out west?
Yeah, you know, this isn't, something new. You know, back in the early 2000s, you know, when Pete Carroll was making his run at USC and in Texas with Mack Brown and they're winning national championships, they did a good job of recruiting other parts of the country. And it's so funny, back then, no one was saying, you know, how USC was stealing guys from the Northeast and from the South. It wasn't a news story. But, you know, I get it. We're one conference out west. We're representing the whole country out here out west, and so it's probably a bigger story than it needs to be. I think every single year there's going to be players that leave our footprint, but there's also going to be players that stay, just like there have been for decades. I know this. The National Football League loves our players, especially at the University of Washington. Nobody's had more NFL draft picks since 2014 than the University of Washington, and so we believe that the players that we have selected and have developed and trained, we wouldn't want anybody else to sign with us. We feel like we're pinpointing the right guys, and I think some other teams in our conference can say the same thing. I think it is a fantasy world to think that every player from the state of California, from the state of Washington, from the state of Oregon, Arizona is just going to stay here right in our footprint. Just like it's a fantasy for players that are in the Southeast are going to stay there. You know, they're going to go up to the Midwest, they're going to go to the Northeast, they're going to come out west. That's just the nature of recruiting and the nature of college football. And it's exciting. It's exciting to have these different players from different parts of the country play in different footprints.
There he is. There's Jimmy Lake talking about the state of his football team and where they're at in the future. And it was a small one, but there was a dig at the beginning of it that it was great to see everybody in person and shake the hands of the coaches. And as well it should be. As well it should be. Someone's got to do me a fact check on this one. I'm just interested, because if this is true, that's pretty damn impressive. Did he say they have the most players since 2014 drafted? So they have more players in Alabama? I want to see that number. I'm not saying he's wrong. I just think that's damn impressive. That just seems, I don't know. I mean, doesn't Alabama put like 30 guys like every year into the draft? I don't know. That seems like that could be a little fishy. Maybe secondary guys. Maybe that's what he was getting at, rather than just total guys. But Jimmy Lake talking about the state of his football team moving forward. You know, I'm a little surprised. Whatever, the media does their polls and what have you. I'm a little surprised why they decided to go with Oregon over Washington. And the reason, go look at the two schedules of the two teams. Oregon has an absolute gauntlet of a schedule in front of them. Washington has perhaps the easiest schedule in the conference. And that's just, that's not me. You listen to anyone talk about it. We had Phil Steele on this program who is the godfather of college football in the magazine. It is the easiest schedule in the conference, because of who they avoid and who they get at home. And the thing that's a little bit head-scratcher why the media thought Oregon was better is maybe Dylan Morris is not the starting quarterback coming back this year. I mean, very well could be O'Brien. I doubt it's Heward, but let's just throw him in the mix. Sounds like it's either Morris or O'Brien. Well, you bring Morris back, he's a brief amount of time on the field. Kind of a proven starter, is he not? Oregon does not have a proven starter coming back. The guy that's going to be the starter, I believe, is the cat that was in the bowl game at the end. But didn't really throw the ball, the Brown kid, the transfer. Based on their schedule, based on what they have returning on defense, I will take Washington over Oregon. I'll be on, and I don't know. I don't even think that's that. I don't even really think it's close, to be honest with you. We'll see, because they'll finally face each other this year. When is that game? When are they actually playing each other this year? Let me pull up the schedule. But I was a little surprised by that. A little surprised that they went with Oregon over Washington. But really, at the end of the day, who cares, right? It's just the media and what they did in the preseason rankings. Like, who really cares? It's just at the end of the day, like, whoever's going to win the game is going to win the game. But Obviously, they didn't face each other last year, and this will be a much more test of who is the better team this year when they actually square off. Yeah, they're at Washington November 6th. So, I mean, here's Oregon's schedule. I mean, they're at Ohio State. They're at Stanford. They're at UCLA. They're at Washington. They're at Utah. Like, on their, in terms of their schedule and who they have on the road. Washington, on the flip side, has nothing like that in terms of tough opponents on the road. Michigan, obviously Michigan. Okay, but at Michigan, their road games are at Oregon State, so they get Cal at home. They get UCLA at home. They're at Arizona State, but Arizona State's got a new system and all that.
Underground by then, too.
Arizona. The one where they could get tripped up, or I could see them getting tripped up, is at Stanford. At Stanford the next week. But they get Oregon at home. They get ASU at home. They get Wazoo at home. And they got to travel to Colorado. I mean, their schedule is immensely easier than Oregon. So, I don't know. I'll put my money on them. Oh, did he say the most draft picks in the Pac-12?
I don't think in that answer he specified that it was.
Because that makes sense.
But I think, in the concept of the part that they were talking, he's probably implied that.
That's what he was talking about. Because I don't think it's overall. Pac-12, okay, 100%. There you go. That clears it up. I'm easily confused because I'm a village idiot. Let's see. Tweet of the day coming up.
Tails.
Tweet of the day. If you got a tweet for us you'd like us to react to, discuss, send it our way. Jason Puckett 20 on Twitter. Curtis, what's the Twitter handle?
Curtis_Crabtree.
Damn right.
The whistles go woo!
Damn right they do. We're in the Ballpark Realty Studio, ballpark-realty.com. Give Jerry a call, 206-510-2749. Curtis is in the Red Box booth, the smarter way to watch and play. Mariners win again last night. They're back on the mound tonight, taking on the hated Houston Astros. No one likes the bleeping Astros. And pitching matchup here tonight to old Chris Flexen on the mound. It's old Lance McCullers Jr. Ooh, that's a juicy little matchup tonight. Come on, Flexi. Mariners 55-46. They're on the season. We're going to have more on the Mariners coming up top of the hour with our lunch break. All right, our tweet of the day, no audio to this, although we probably could have found it, but that's fine, is imagine being, now I'm not a big fan of the, and to each their own, of the Monday Night Crew this last year. I don't know about you, Curtis, doesn't really do a lot for me. At the end of the day, you really, all you care about is the game. But the Brian Griese, Lewis Riddick and Steve Levy, I don't know. There's just not a lot of sizzle and flash there. It's if the game's boring, there's nothing those guys are going to do to make it entertaining. Well, and then ESPN is just undercutting these guys and bastardizing their own product. Now, this came out a couple weeks ago when we found out that Peyton Manning is joining the network to work as an analyst for Monday Night Football. But he and his brother Eli, they're doing it for just, I think it's only 10 games. Right, there are 10 games. Is that all their Monday night schedule is? It's only 10 games? No. But they're only doing it for 10 games. But they're going to be doing it on an alternate channel. They're going to be on a mega cast.
Yeah, so think like the national championship game when they do the coach's film room over here or the local Homer broadcast here and there and that sort of thing.
It's going to be called the Manning Cast. It will be on ESPN2 and it will stream on all the Disney platforms like ESPN+. Well, now they're adding another voice. They're going to add Adam Schefter that he's not going to be really a play-by-play, but he's going to be more of like a host. They want him to be more like Ernie Johnson. So now, I'm just telling you, I guess most people will watch the traditional broadcast. I don't know. If it's on ESPN2, if you have ESPN, you clearly have ESPN2. What are you going to watch more? I'll be honest with you. I'm going to watch this. The Manning Brothers, because I think they're funny. And it's Adam Schefter. What's more entertaining? Peyton and Eli and Adam Schefter, or Steve Levy, Louis Riddick, and Brian Griese? I mean, they are just... Can you imagine, just to put yourself in the position of the three that do the traditional Monday Night Football, they've got to be like, what are you doing? You're just completely undercutting us. So when the ratings aren't good, you're going to be happy because the ratings over there are good, but the reason ours aren't good is because you've added them. Yeah, that's kind of a dirty move by ESPN. I mean, the ESPN, like a lot of companies, pretty dirty. That's pretty dirty. Man, what would you rather watch if you're going to watch the two?
The unknown quantity, at least to start with.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd be curious to see Peyton and Eli and how that went.
And then Schefter on there. Schefter would break down all. I mean, Adam Schefter is the number one newsbreaker, probably in sports. Him and Woj. To hear him give his insight on what he's hearing around the league, I'd rather hear that than Brian Griese and Louis Riddick. I think it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun to see how they do. Let's talk more baseball top of the hour. Our good friend. We used to do baseball games together in college. And he sent me a tape of my first volleyball game I did a few months ago, which was terrible. A Mariners broadcaster. You hear him on the radio at times. Gary Hill Jr. He's back on the radio program next, talking all things Mariners. It's our lunch break, our top story of the day, brought to you by NorthwestFarmFresh.com.